The Guardian.
Football Weekly is sponsored by Squarespace. Make your next move and create your next website using Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code Football Weekly to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
Football Weekly today, cut magic latest. Millwall spared the cane but still get a spanking at White Hart Lane, while elsewhere, incredible fairy tale run finally ends as Borough beaten. Also, as Lincoln's charming run comes to its end, we salute the side who put the imp in Mission Impossible and saved their most improbable act for last, making Arsenal look like winners again. Also, we'll be looking forward to the midweek games, the quarterfinals of the Champions League and Europa League's getting sorted out. Who needs defending when there's Monaco Man City? And there's another thriller, perhaps, in Leicester Sevilla. Craig Shakespeare in the Champions League last eight. It could happen. All of that plus your posts in this Football Weekly. Yeah, very special pod today, listeners. It's Amy Lawrence.
Good morning.
Good morning, Amy.
Hi.
Oh, you haven't been in forever.
I know. The pod's had a lovely redecoration, I can see.
Do you like what we've done with the place,
yeah,
etc.?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Also here, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
And Sasha Gurionov.
Good morning, James.
Good morning to you. It's a nice off, basically. Barry, as you can imagine, has been knocked out in the preliminaries. So it's just us spinning positive and warm vibes. And speaking of which, let's start, Sasha, on a cuddly note, with the FA Cup clash that you were at just yesterday at White Hart Lane.
Oh, it was lovely, particularly outside, particularly getting there. Tottenham High Road blocked off by the police because they had to bring through the Millwall fans from the station, and basically people trying to get through on both sides. And then, of course, Millwall fans arrived and there was a bit of brouhaha, but nothing really happened.
Right.
But then I was late into the ground.
But also, I mean, you're a Russian.
Well, this is of course topical because this trouble seems to follow me. No reaction in Russia at the moment. Maybe the news hasn't reached them.
All right, okay, yeah. So it never really kicked off.
No,
the thing you filmed on your telephone seemed to suggest it might, and there were reports of.
Yeah, I think someone got punched after the game. But before the game, there was so much. I've never seen so much police at an English football match. Not even Liverpool, Manchester United. It was just basically halfway down the road, either side, police vans. The riot police cordoning the whole place off, so there was really no chance of anything happening, to be honest.
Right, not much fun to try and get to a football game through all of that.
But just standing there for half an hour going, can I go through, please? Can I go through, please? And then climbing over a van to actually get through.
Right.
I think there's quite an interesting point moving forward in the sense that Tottenham, when they're building their new stadium, which they are, and obviously will be ready for a lot more people to come to in the not-too-distant future, it's obviously a modern, super comfortable, lovely stadium that's being built, but it's still essentially in the same place. So for big, tasty games in future, trying to get even more people safely to and from White Hart Lane could be quite interesting.
You're in the unique position of having already been to their new stadium. Isn't that right, Amy?
Well, I've been to sort of virtual reality which was very exciting. Yes.
What happened?
We got invited to have a kind of virtual look round, so
right.
to speak.
Could you walk around?
Well, you can. You've got the goggles and the, you know, it's very a bit embarrassing, to be, of course, and inevitable, but I felt quite dizzy and a little bit sick.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite weird.
So it is quite realistic.
Yeah, exactly. But what they were mainly showing us was the facilities and the view for the sort of executive high-end special.
What are they going to get?
Well, there's lots of, you know, bars
there's
that
there's
like they could be in swanky
that
five
looks onto the player's tunnel.
There
yeah.
is, yes. It's the sort of one-way glass.
Ooh.
I'm sure the players would love to see executive supporters supping their champagne before a game, but no,
that's bizarre. So they've basically got one-way glass.
It is.
So the players are going to be walking past these mirrors, a bit like when you go through customs, and you kind of you're not sure whether to smile or frown or. What do you do when you go through customs?
I keep my best poker face. I don't blink. I don't even move my eyes. So I look kind of like I've just been heavily drugged.
Right.
Which is probably, you know, looking back, actually a bad tactic.
There's no good tactic when you go through customs. If you're an HM Customs and Excise officer listening, we salute your work. And do you know, write in, let us know what is the best tactic. What don't you look for? Anyway, Amy, is there a cheese room?
Well, we were informed of a special fromagerie that will be on site with specially curated or designed Tottenham cheeses for, you know, the very best area of restauranting experience available in their poshest seats. Mm. But to be honest, it was all very well looking around all of that. I'm much more interested to see they've actually designed this. Is one of the few stadiums, I think, in modern times that have been designed with an end. A proper end, a proper kind of no swanky seats in the middle breaking it all up, no nice sort of areas. They've got an actual sort of old-style cop, albeit with seats in it. But, I mean, most modern grounds that have been built with this kind of oval shape, I think the big disaster, and whoever did the first one, in my opinion, is a heretic and ruined a lot of football grounds because everybody followed suit, where they had to have these oval shapes and you don't have an end anymore, and football has to have ends. It's a bit of a hobby horse of mine, this.
Right.
But when you're defending your end, or indeed attacking against the other end, you've got to feel it's going towards something. And as a fan, if you stand in an end, which is generally in traditionally where the hardcore used to go, part of that experience was exactly about that. You're trying to suck the ball into the net, or indeed put people off as best you can and try and save the day. So, but it's a much more visceral experience. And when you're in one of these kind of little funny ovals with corners, it just spoils everything.
Right. You're broadly positive then about the shape of Spurs' new stadium, although you would like to know that they are making plans for, you know, better access perhaps for unruly fans. Of course, you saw your own vicious street scenes outside Arsenal's clash with Lincoln, the Wexit protest. We'll come back to that later on, because we really ought to talk about what happened on field between Spurs and Millwall, 0-0, when Harry Kane got injured and they went and scored 6 goals without him.
Yeah, Son went centre forward, Eriksen came on the right. The first 4 goals were brilliantly taken. I mean, I think if you haven't seen them, Son's first 2 goals are excellent. Millwall had no chance. I think they had a standing goalkeeper, but he faced 15 shots, made 9 saves. Unfortunately, he spilled the last one over the line, but I think he was just knackered, basically.
Right, Millwall had defended brilliantly in this competition until this point. I think in all competitions, actually. They had a standing goalkeeper. Spurs had a stand-in, well, footballer, really, Vincent Janssen, who actually scored. Yeah. the scenes afterwards when everyone went and gave him a little hug.
But then the whole stadium was singing for him as well, and it was so lovely, yet so patronising and soul-destroying, I think, for Vincent Janssen, because they were obviously trying to support him because he hasn't been doing so well. But
right. That's his first goal from open play?
I think so. Yeah. It was well taken, but yeah, it's quite depressing for him.
In how many games, Ian?
30 appearances of one kind or another.
Having said that, I think it's basically a magic weekend, because Soldado also scored this weekend
for
Villarreal. They won 1-0 at Celta Vigo, I believe. I think it was a header.
Crazy scenes. Anyway, so Spurs look really, really good, which slightly ameliorates, if you will, the issue of Kane's departure, or does it? Because they're talking now about potentially him being out for 7 weeks, and last time this happened, Spurs really struggled without him. What was it, 6 games without a win, I think?
Well, no, I don't think they did struggle actually that much in terms of games, because I looked it up. I think they won 2, drawn 3 in the Premier League, and they went 1-1-1 in the Champions League without him. But they lost a bit of momentum, which then carried on like into November, so they didn't really get going again until later. But his injury yesterday, I mean, I saw still of it, looked pretty bad, because his ankle's just folded underneath him.
Yeah.
And last time, so he was out for that period. I mean, Pochettino's been asked after the game, but of course he can't really say anything because they haven't scanned him. But without him, and especially given the form he's in, I'd be a worried man if I were Pochettino.
Right. Sounds like a real issue, that, for Spurs and England. Oh, and also for Dele Alli, who can't do... Has he got a backup handshake partner? I'm not sure. 7 weeks, if that is the magnitude of his injury or his absence, that's a couple of games for England, as well as potentially huge games for Spurs in their battle to stay in the top 4.
Well, it's a huge concern for England, because I think there's really only 2 people who can do what Harry Kane does in winning the aerial balls, holding it up, and being clever enough to pass it on to other people. And
could Andy Carroll do that job?
Well, this is a thing. They're both made of plasterboard. One's Andy Carroll and one's Danny Welbeck. I don't really think you can play Jamie Vardy as a lone striker. And, you know, he's only just started to look like his old self again. You can't play Wayne Rooney. He's not fit for purpose. So there's definitely a worry there for Gareth Southgate. For Tottenham, you've got Vincent Janssen, who hasn't scored a Premier League goal in open play yet, hasn't really looked mobile enough to do what Kane does, let alone confident enough in front of goal, or Son, who tends to play better out wide and deeper.
But he did look great when he filled in at the start of the season.
Yeah, he's had his moments. He had a very good day against Stoke, as I recall. But it's not ideal. The odds of Tottenham stopping Chelsea are pretty lengthy, but they were pretty much the only candidate. So that may well slow that one down a bit.
All right. Ian, I'm told you have a stat about Dele Alli.
I believe he's now scored more goals in 2017 than Jack Wilshere has in his entire career.
That's remarkable.
Mm. What a day to knock Jack Wilshere down, given that he was instrumental
Seems
in the win.
I thought this was going to be a nice, lovely pod.
Yeah. Yes. Let's move on then to Arsenal's cup overflowing victory over Lincoln, 5-0. Sasha, you were there as well. But how impressed, Amy, were you with the Imps?
Very. The first half an hour in particular, without being patronising, hopefully, genuinely thought to myself, I've seen Premier League teams on this ground this season who haven't been as organised and as committed and as comfortable as they were. Even Arsenal, boom, boom. But yeah, no, I genuinely thought they were so impressively kind of on their game that you did think, how can there be five divisions? You know, it didn't look like what you would, you know, define as a National League or non-league side. They looked much more like perhaps a League One sort of territory. I'd be really quite surprised if they can keep the management of the bulk of the players together, that if they don't get promoted through some successive divisions. Right. I'd be half expecting to see them, you know, hitting League One, you know, in the not too distant future, if they can keep that lot together. They really, really look like they've got a fantastic atmosphere going. They're obviously the management sort of brotherly double act thing is highly respected. The players are responding brilliantly to them. They've got some talented players there. I mean, it was Woodyard, a midfield player, really looked fantastically comfortable on the ball. And you think, this is the fifth tier of English football. That's quite a statement. And it was brilliant to see Matt Reed, the ginormous mammoth, with a fancy back heel a few minutes into the game. I just thought it was great.
Right. How nervous were people getting as time wore on? Because they really were. They seemed to be covering Arsenal at everything they did. And then that chance for the Nathan Arnold.
Yeah. Petr Cech had to make a decent save. But I think, seeing it was only the first half, I don't think it was. You could see that there was sort of tangible nerves. And right. Plus, the atmosphere at Arsenal is slightly strange at the moment, in the sense that, you know, there's a bit of apathy there. There's a bit of people that are turning up thinking, oh, well, you know, we are where we are. There's obviously a whole spectrum of opinions about where the club is, where they should be, who are the people who perhaps ought to be providing a little bit more. So it's a funny atmosphere. I mean, obviously, most of the kind of protests and stuff that are talked about tend to be outside the ground.
Right.
And it's relatively small numbers.
Okay.
And then generally those who come into the ground, whatever they might be thinking, they're trying to support the team, but without sort of any great sense of urgency or expectation. I think expectations are quite sort of modest at the moment.
Yeah. Well, as you pointed out, Lincoln still have plenty to aim for this season, a National League title to clinch, an FA Trophy semi-final to negotiate for a trip to Wembley. Are their chances of getting to the National Stadium better than Arsenal's?
Probably yes, because they're flying top of their league with games in hand. They're the best team in their division. You would pronounce them probable favourites in their semi-final. Arsenal will have a semi-final against whoever it is. It's going to be another member
side,
of the top sort of handful. Oh. And their record against the top teams is not brilliant.
Right. The last eight games, only three wins, and one was Hull and the other two were non-league sides. Anybody else Arsenal have not managed to beat? It's a bit worrying. Do you you were saying that smaller numbers outside for the protest, which gained a lot of traction, as media folks say, in various outlets. I mean, it wasn't a well-supported march, that?
It's how would you define well-supported? I mean, the trouble with all these things is that, you know, we cling on to things as representative of fans.
Right.
But it's very difficult to take anything that is representative of fans, because as a group, any set of supporters is massively diverse.
Okay.
When I, you know, people quite often ask me, you know, where are the Arsenal fans now? On Wenger, what's going on? And, you know, there is no one answer. It would be ludicrous to
Where
suggest.
Where are you as an Arsenal fan?
Well, that's not really the point. The point is
quite curious to know.
I'm sure you might be. But what I'm trying to say is that I think the vast majority of people are in the middle ground where right. I think most people that I speak to definitely feel that it's time for a change at management level. However, they're not willing to hold up a placard or go on a march or contribute to a fund to have an aeroplane fly over a stadium. That's not where most people are. There is a small percentage of people who want to take it to that extreme. And there is a small percentage of people on the other extreme who, whatever happens, think that Arsene Wenger should be entitled to sign as many contracts as he likes forever and ever.
Right.
So there is no one single view right. on what Arsenal
And does none
do.
Of it matter because he's going to be there next year anyway?
I say that's probably the probable outcome.
Right, okay. All right, we'll move on then. Sasha?
Actually, can I just give some love to Danny Cowley and Lincoln City? Because I thought after the match in the press conference that Cowley was very impressive. None of this, we had great fun in the cup and everything. He said, actually, you know, this actually has greatly accelerated his learning and his players' learning, you know, coming up against this big size. That's why they had the huddle in the middle after the game. Mm. He said, look, I don't usually celebrate defeats, but I think we had to celebrate our journey here. I know it's a bit of management speak, but I think he basically wanted to celebrate the achievement of his players, also the clubs, and between 1.5 and 2 million quid, which I think is excellent. And also, I think you have to look at what he's done there, because Lincoln City are a big club. I mean, compared to Sutton United, I mean, they were moving in different directions. Mm. But until this season, they've been in the National League for 6 seasons and always bottom half finishes. Right. They're nowhere near playoffs. So he comes in, having just come from a season at Braintree, a semi-pro team that he took into the playoffs, and just revitalised the place completely. And now they are pushing up, as Amy was saying, like looking like a League One side, a very strong team. Now they have a very difficult 2.5 months because they're playing Saturday, Tuesday, but they just made 3 signings. The first signing just got a hat-trick at Braintree. So I think they are properly preparing for the end of the season, and I think they look like they will be going up. One small thing about the FA Trophy final, it's 3 weeks after the end of the season. So the season finishes at the end of April, and the FA Trophy final is like 21st of May. I'm not sure who thought this would be a great idea, but...
It's madness, isn't it?
So there is no way the Cowley brothers will be League Two managers next season, because they're going to get snapped up by someone.
Do you think that someone's going to come in for them?
It's all of the stuff around it, you know, the PE teachers who've only just got into it, the workaholics, the intense match analysis they do all the time, the travelling, the broom story that's come out this morning. Do you hear that? Where they actually asked for a mop and bucket, and they got presented with a broom, so they could sweep out the dressing room.
Was it
a Hoover?
Not quite.
You know, don't ruin your story.
There was no Henry available, unfortunately, so they got a broom and they swept out their own dressing room.
Right.
And you start getting this sort of build up, and everyone watching this. And Sasha's right; they handled themselves really impressively throughout this. There's been no, we're just here to have fun. They're getting a League One job or a Championship job.
Mm-hmm. And also one thing to add to that as well, it's I thought Lincoln were very good at the tactical little breaks. With players going down, spending a bit of time on the ground, and in the meantime, Cowley brothers would call over 4 or 5 players and issue instructions. Very, very intense management.
Of course, they'll go their separate ways and meet in the final of a major competition years down the line, where they won't have spoken in 20 years probably. And
it's going to be amazing. There you go, with a nice, lovely warm pod again.
Right. Well, there you go. That was Arsenal's 5-0 win, and Sanchez with a great goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot of people afterwards from the Arsenal point of view going, so what? It's only Lincoln. You know, the game doesn't mean anything in terms of the performance. You can't take anything from the players. I heard that kind of vibe. You know, as if it somehow didn't count. I think the one thing that probably counted, irrespective of the opposition, is it was the first time in ages that Arsenal's players have actually looked like they were A, playing without any pressure, and B, sort of enjoying playing football again.
Right.
And whether they can actually
Sanchez
use that.
Sanchez looked like he enjoyed the game the other night quite a lot. Anyway, all right, well, that's good then. Nice to see them happy once more. We'll take a quick break, listener, but do stay with us, because after this, we'll be talking about, other cup stuff, really.
Create a beautiful website or online store with an award-winning template from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com and enter the offer code FOOTBALLWEEKLY to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your next website.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listener, just one little coda, if I may, on that Arsenal-Lincoln game. Ian, you wrote a piece today about the protest outside and the chant that went up of Arsene Wenger, "You're killing our club," in which you cite various other clubs that have rather been killed and suggest that Arsenal fans might like a bit of perspective. You mentioned Leighton Orient, who a lot of listeners have been mentioning to us. Things pretty bleak there at the moment.
Yeah, you may recall that not very long ago they were one penalty shootout away from going into the second flight. In the short time that's passed since then, they've had 10 managers. They're facing a winding up order. Their new owner there was an attempted extradition order on him to Albania. He's been accused of locking players in the hotel for a period of time. I'm laughing, and it's not funny at all. Leighton Orient are in serious, serious trouble because Bichetti, his interest is so minimal that it's not even known if he'll turn up for the winding up order, which could lead to the club actually being liquidated and wiped out. So there's a Leighton Orient fighting fund that's been set up in there is a view among some supporters that they would almost welcome the administration because it would at least remove Bichetti. They'll take the points hit, they'll go back down and they'll
try and
rebuild.
Where would they go down to?
They'd go back down to the conference.
Right.
For the first time since 1909.
Wow.
Mm. So it's and I say this as a Southend United fan with every reason to despise Leighton Orient, but there are some things that are a bit much even for your hated rivals, and Leighton Orient have been treated appallingly by their owner.
Right. Now, elsewhere in FA Cup land this weekend, well, one game still to play. That's Chelsea-Man United this evening. Mourinho talking about Man United's too big. The winner of this competition, we can't go to Stamford Bridge with a Nicky Butt team. That's what he said regarding his squad selection, his first 11 that he was going to. But he's been rather hampered in that desire to play a full-strength team by the fact that he doesn't have any forwards, literally none.
Yeah, there was a theory, because of the back three that he played against Rostov, there was a theory that actually he might, for I think the first time, certainly in his time in English football, be gearing up to play a back three against Chelsea to match him up man for man. But he's going to have a bit of a job because he's got no strikers.
Hmm. Martial and Rashford are both ill. Ibra's suspended. Rooney, apart from being Rooney, he's also got an injury concern.
Yeah, so it looks like the number one option is Marouane Fellaini, which
always
might not be as bad as it seems.
Doesn't sound bad. I think it's excellent.
Okay, Well, if Chelsea do have a weakness, it's crosses coming in over the box. If you can just fly some stuff over there for Fellaini.
Right.
And if they've got the wing-backs who can make the difference, because obviously Chelsea are quite good in that department. Mm. Luke Shaw may not have the stamina to do 90 minutes bombing up and down the left.
But will he get a game, do you think?
I don't think even he knows. There's right. various reports coming out that he genuinely has no idea where he stands. He might consider that Mourinho hates him because he turned down Chelsea as a transfer option. And he went to Manchester United instead. But Mourinho certainly has singled him out for blame, particularly against Watford earlier in the season. Mm. I don't think Shaw's a very happy bunny.
Well, anyway, it's going to be fascinating to see what actually happens and how closely it mirrors your predictions about Fellaini's, you know, perceived advantage against Chelsea's defence. Oh, Sasha, the game is taking place this evening, though, so be careful, because most people are going to hear this after it happens.
I'm going to the game as well, I'll put it out there. Maybe Mkhitaryan is a false nine, but I'm not really sure about that. But I think he can do a job there, but maybe might get swamped by Kante plus one, maybe if he drops too deep. But also on Shaw, I think probably maybe likelier that Young will play there, I think.
Mm. Right. Then on Thursday, Sasha, they've got the second leg against Rostov. Is that a done deal? Is that away goal from Mkhitaryan enough?
Well, the guys in Russia actually thought the reason that Mourinho played the back three was not out of respect, but to pick up a draw away from home in Europe. And they went, oh yeah, pragmatic Mourinho, that's what he does. But I mean, Berdyaev is an interesting character, and Rostov are basically very awkward to play against. So they play the 5-3-2, which they basically kept the same for the entirety of the Champions League campaign, apart from the fullbacks. Unfortunately, they lost quite a lot of players in the first game. So basically, you have Kalachov and Gatskan suspended. Mm. You have one of the centre-backs, Granat, with a broken collarbone. So they have to reshuffle it a little bit. And I am not sure they're going to have enough depth, but they've come back from a draw at home previously against Anderlecht in the qualifiers. They drew 2-2 and then won 2-0 away. So really? I don't think it is a done deal for United. Question is, how is he going to play it up front? Because you could see in the first game, Bukharov scored quite a nice non-Bukharov goal because he's actually a card horse. So whether he's going to play or Azmoun's going to play, maybe Bukharov's going to play maybe for an hour and Azmoun unleashed to try to hit them on the counter. But I don't think it's a done deal.
Okay, well, you're right. It was a lovely goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just a great pass from Kalachov, who's suspended as well, so unfortunately. So I think...
I'll tell you who's not suspended for this game, Sasha. Ibra. He can play.
Ibra caused quite a stir in Rostov.
Oh, did he? What did he do?
I mean, no, it's just basically Ibra and Mourinho turning up. The whole place went absolutely mad for it. Really? And also I think the game in Rostov was sort of an opportunity for the Russians to say, look, we're not all hooligans here. We can actually be quite nice. So I think the 80 United fans who made it over to Rostov had actually a pretty good time.
All right.
There was no issues. I mean, I think the Russians, just in case, set up a supporters hotline in case there is any issues.
Yes.
And I think, as you saw, a former Miss Russia who is an ambassador for Rostov for the World Cup took a pack of journalists around. I think I saw a comment from Barry saying, haha, look at you guys, you got taken around by supermodel, now you think everything is going to be great. But the impression I get is that...
Will there be Miss Worlds at every venue from the World Cup?
For every group of journalists. No, she's Miss Russia, she's not Miss World. But what I think, my impression seems to be is that for a lot of these journalists, I mean, I know they're from Manchester, they're sort of maybe not necessarily cover the national team, but it could have been possibly the first time they actually encountered Russians, you know, face to face.
Right.
So I think in terms... No?
I encountered some Russians in Marseille. I'd say face to face, but I was running away really quickly.
Nice Russians in okay, right. Yeah, I mean... Point taken, but basically perhaps nice Russians that do not chase people around cities, but, you know, sort of officials, journalists, for example, a former Miss Russia. So I think they're trying to somehow turn around the bad PR after the BBC documentary.
And joking aside, I should say, when I came out the stadium in Marseille on that England-Russia night, I walked straight out in the middle of all the Russian fans, almost all of whom were face-painted and smiling and lovely. So there is always a danger. There were obviously some very, very bad things that happened there. But there's a danger you can go too far and start thinking all Russian supporters are completely mad. Because they're not. They were nice.
Oh, right.
And I think also you have to bear in mind, you know, the World Cup isn't just happening in Moscow and St. Petersburg. And for a lot of smaller provincial Russian cities, you know, foreign fans and people arriving is like, whoa, this is unbelievable. And we'll try to make him feel welcome.
Sasha, it's either this or we talk about Man City Borough. So if you had a pick of where you wanted to go, like, you know, which city, which undiscovered gem do you think of the host cities do you think people should look out for, try and aim towards? Because I don't know much about Russia. I've been to Moscow several times, but...
Actually, I think Rostov is a good shout, because Rostov in the summer, it's quite a sort of lively, happening city, and it's got very nice climate. So I think June, July time would be lovely. Kazan is a very sort of nice, looked-after place. Not so sure about Kaliningrad or Volgograd, places like that.
Avoid places with grad in the title. Yeah.
Well, yeah, might be a little bit grotty.
Okay. All right, then. I was kidding about Man City Borough. Of course we're going to discuss that. Because David Silva, of course, naturally he went and scored after my ill-advised comments about, is he really the greatest thing ever to grace a midfield? Anyway, so he went and scored and had an excellent game, and Borough went out of the only competition that they've is this the only competition they've scored any goals in 2017?
In 2017, they've scored 9 goals.
Yes.
7 of them have been against lower league opposition.
In the FA Cup?
In the FA Cup.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, City looked good, and they kept a clean sheet. Well, yeah. And now they're going to go over to Monaco on Wednesday for the return of what was, well, I'm going to say it was, it's been the Champions League game of the season, possibly the game of the season in any competition, Amy, that first leg at the Etihad.
It was up there with Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, either leg, maybe.
Right. Well,
it was a fantastic game.
As far as your kids know.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Mark Cole.
Don't worry, we caught up on that.
Mark Cole, have you?
Yeah.
All right. Mark Cole says Amy needs to tell her story about making her kid go to bed during Barca PSG.
Not just during, about 10 minutes from time.
On what basis?
On the basis that it was a school night. You know about these, James.
Some learning you can only do outside of school.
Thank you very much. On the basis that all the years of watching football that I had under my belt, I thought, well, nothing's going to happen now. Nothing that dramatic that people will talk about it forever and a day.
People leaving the stadium on that basis. People genuinely were leaving the stadium.
I thought that people were staying. I thought people were saying that, oh, look, everybody from Barcelona still stayed.
No, apparently there was I got this third hand, but somebody was telling me that they had got to the stadium late and passed people coming out. It was during that kind of half-hour spell after PSG had brought them back, and it seemed over. It seemed like nothing was going to happen.
Yeah, anyway, basically, we're about 10 minutes from time. He said, please, please, we're so close to the end. Can't I stay to the end of the game? And I said, come on, you've got to get out really early tomorrow, 6:45.
Right.
What did you say in the morning? Was it like a kind of news and bad news? The good news is you saw most of the best game ever.
I tried to salvage my tattered reputation by just going in and saying, if you get dressed really quickly, you're going to get a treat, which is to watch telly before school.
Right. So nice. Good spin on that one. Nice. Well played.
You know.
Take your parenting notes here, yeah.
Right, anyway, back to Monaco Man City game. How are they going to do that? There's rumours that Jardim is going to try a new tactic. It's called defending. What? No word yet how it's going to work, especially. But what are Man City going to do? You're 5-3 up. Effectively, that's a two-goal lead, and that's the most dangerous predicament of all.
Yeah, just go out and try and win the game. Don't overthink all of those goals.
There's going to be loads more goals, you just know it. It's just a question of how many and in which order.
They're so hard to stop. There's so much pace in Monaco's front line. You can't go out and just try and protect a two-goal lead against a team like that. Just go out and play.
Yeah, Monaco's stats, 82 goals they've scored in 28 games. Falcao's got 21 in all competitions. Although he's a slight injury doubt after picking up a hip injury against Bordeaux. You've got Mucinho, who scored an absolute stunner at the weekend in a fairly hard one, a 2-1 victory over Bordeaux. And Mbappe, who's on 8 goals in 7 games and is barely 18. Sasha.
I know you mentioned defending. I thought maybe they might try the goalkeeping as well, because it was an absolute howler by the goalkeeper.
Again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was uncharacteristic, their performance at the back against Man City. They did look the better side, I thought, for, say, the first hour, and then they just kind of ran out of steam, which could well be the issue here, plus the fact that they have got that two-goal disadvantage. But
I think if any teams are going to be not too worried about having a two-goal disadvantage to make up at home in terms of the goal scoring, it's probably Monaco. I think that the key is that they've got to make sure that they don't do anything silly at the other end, which is what we know might happen.
Who's going to go through, Amy?
I think there's going to be that many goals that we have to just go to roulette of penalties.
Really?
Why not?
Another 5-3.
Go for something silly, just for a laugh.
All right. The other French team scoring loads of goals at the moment are Lyon, one of which came from Memphis Depay this very weekend.
It was against Toulouse. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was really well struck as well.
Yeah, it's just brilliant. Picks up the ball in the middle of the pitch, in case you haven't seen it all over Twitter and Facebook, picks up the ball in the middle of the pitch and just turns round and hooks it high into the night sky and straight into the back of the net.
It's brilliant. So that was part of a 4-0 win this weekend against Toulouse, with some of their star players out the starting lineup. I think Lacazette was on the bench. Fekir, I think, came on. They, previously on Thursday in the Europa League, first leg against Roma, who were one of the favourites this year, Lyon came back to make it a 4-2 win. Some brilliant goals there. Just really stunning strikes. In the Europa League, they're currently scoring 5 goals a game, so they're looking really good. And their game on Thursday at the Stadio Olimpico against a Roma side that suddenly, although they did get a win last night against one of the worst teams in Italy, Palermo, suddenly seems to have lost their way, could be very spicy indeed.
What do you predict there, Jim?
I think Lyon are going to go through. I'm not too kind of uncertain about that one. I think, yeah, Lyon.
Is this the end of Roma's season then?
Well, the league's over. And that would only leave them the Coppa Italia, which they're 2-0 down from the first leg against hated neighbours Lazio. So, yeah, it could do. Or maybe they'll go through. Who can say? I'll certainly be watching with interest on Thursday. Huh. Now, there's other Champions League to come, and we'll be talking about that after this. Midweek, 3 other Champions League matches for your consideration. A lot of people are going to be tuning in to Leicester's clash with Sevilla. Back-to-back 3-1s they've had under Craig Shakespeare. They look like last season's Leicester again.
Yep, and I know that over the past 2 or 3 months, I've been saying they've got to get rid of Ranieri, they've got to get rid of Ranieri, and it's been a mean, horrible thing to say, and I've deserved the brickbats that have come my way.
Have you had brickbats?
Well, it's like calling for the shooting of Bambi's mum. And you'll note that I've said Bambi's mum just because I know Barry will be listening and that really upsets him. The Bambi's mum thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it was so the right decision. I've watched their last 2 games, Leicester, against Liverpool and Hull, and they are back into that title-winning team. Mm. They are the tight, compact, driven, dynamic, quick, counter-attacking tenacious gits of a football team that won the title. And I wouldn't be even remotely surprised if they didn't have to get through this round, even against Sevilla. And I'd never have said that while Ranieri, who I adore and will do forever, but they would not be anywhere near that.
They have an away goal.
Mm-hmm.
Sevilla's defence, how pacey are they, given the way that Leicester team seem to take apart sides that can't react quickly at the back?
Well, very few people are as quick as Jamie Vardy.
Mm.
And it just depends how much room you leave him. But it's more than that. Now, Mahrez is back. He's been practically invisible all season. And the way he cuts in from the flank now, all of a sudden, the way he actually covers this fullback now, all of a sudden, the change just across the board in every single player is so dramatic.
You were saying Leicester in the quarterfinals.
I could see it. I could absolutely see it. I still think Sevilla are probably the better team. But Sevilla should have been four up at half time in the first leg, and they may have to pay for that.
Absolutely. Hey, while we're on the subject of Spain, Sevilla were held to a 1-1 draw at home to Leganes this weekend. But the big shot news in the Liga, Barcelona. 4 days after whatever happened at the end of that game against PSG, which nobody really knows, they went and lost 2-1 at Deportivo. Just to put that in perspective, because Deportivo are a big name, of course, but these days Deportivo are one place above relegation. And you know who's managing them these days? Step forward, Pepe Mel. Pepe Mel. And they haven't lost a game since he took over. That's four matches now.
That's a twist worthy of one of his own detective novels.
That's so true. So true.
I also quite enjoy the fact they have a Stoke loanee who scored the first goal, Joselu.
Oh.
I remember him.
Very nice. Anyway, also from our Spanish department, Atletico Madrid taking on Bayer Leverkusen. Bayer Leverkusen have a new manager, Typhoon Corker. Crazy name, crazy guy. And Atletico likely to sail through in that one because they have four away goals from a 4-2 win at the Bayer Arena. And then you've got your Juventus, Porto, Juve, 2-0 up from the Dragão. And they had a big win on Friday. I don't know if you saw this. They took on Milan at home. And where they're 17 months unbeaten, actually.
Remarkable ending.
Yeah.
Unusual, yeah.
Unusual in the extreme, well, because they went and won it with a really dodgy penalty at the end. I know.
Just can't believe it.
Well, I guess, you know, it was their turn, finally. it was, to be fair, not a penalty, was it? I mean, but basically the ball's kicked into, I can't even remember which Milan defender it was.
There's
but anyway,
two of them there, wasn't there?
There's two, and he's about a metre away, and the ball's absolutely whacked into his arm, and so, OK, that's a penalty. Montella, to his credit, Vincenzo Montella, the estimable Milan manager, said no excuses, and his side, I thought, played pretty well. The Juve winning with a dodgy penalty at the end was the third most surprising thing I saw from Serie A in the last week. Second would be the new Palermo president. Have you seen him? The man with the tattoos all over the place and a penchant for posing topless with strands of spaghetti in a lavish fashion extended from his mouth, or lemons perched over his nipples.
What's behind that?
He's a kind of reality TV star, and he's done lots of TV where he's half American, you know, Sasha. Yeah. Anyway, James Horncastle supplied the story yesterday. He was awoken in his hotel in Palermo last week by some ultras who said, if you're genuinely committed to being our new president, given that you've not previously been associated with the club, come and get some ink of the Palermo crest, which he duly did. They had a tattooist standing by in the hotel. So there's a picture of him, and you know, there's a fresh little kind of the eagle crest right under his nipple.
I think we need to get this somehow enshrined into FIFA law.
Yeah.
If you want to buy a football club, I would like to see the tattooist outside Stanley Cronker Esquire's mansion in Texas, down the ranch. Any other takers?
Which Sisu hedge fund representative would they push through the door? Well, I'm only on work experience.
Now, I did mention that was only the second most surprising, because the most surprising, and I'm still not sure if it was just, you know, when they get lookalikes to do kind of stunt photo op things. Berlusconi in a McDonald's. Berlusconi sat in a McDonald's in Italy.
Drinking a McCafe.
No, he ordered una spumata d'arancio, an orange juice. Yeah, McDonald's in Italy are a little bit different. They have menus and stuff. But he's there. It's clearly an Italian McDonald's. He's sat there. It's bizarre. If anyone's got any explanation on that, do let me know. Can I throw one other Italian thing in, which is also quite surprising? game of the weekend, with all due respect to Juve Milan, came Sunday afternoon when Inter took on Atalanta. Now, these are two of the most informed teams right now in Italy, particularly Atalanta, who have been on an amazing run and knocking on the door of the top four, or possibly even top three, the way they've been going. Inter were behind them. Inter beat them 7-1, which is remarkable, A, because they weren't playing PSG, and B, because Atalanta don't concede goals. In fact, 21% of all the goals that Atalanta have conceded this season came in this match. It's a lot, isn't it? Icardi scored a 9-minute hat-trick, and his fellow Argentine, Ever Banega, also got a hat-trick. Wow, 7-1 anyway. All right, let's move on to other things. Premier League, for example. Premier League, Ian, you just come back from Hull.
Yeah.
You saw Hull beat Swansea 2-1, their first win in five matches.
I saw Umar Nias score a brace.
Wow.
Yeah, is he the man to make Ronald Koeman feel like the man who didn't sign the Beatles? No, probably not. But they were two really well-taken goals.
All right.
And this was...
For anyone who's not followed Nias's career, why is it so shocking that he scored a brace in this game?
Well, he did very well in Russia, as Sasha will tell you. I believe he was Player of the Year over there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was okay.
He won some kind of award in 2015. And then came to Everton for £13.5 million, which was the third largest sum they've ever paid for anyone. Where he scored no goals. Showed no signs of ever scoring a goal and was so impressive in his first 45 minutes of a pre-season friendly that Ronald Koeman had him moved immediately to the development squad and stripped him of a shirt number.
Wow.
He was told in no uncertain terms that his services were no longer required, and then infuriated Koeman even further by not really taking advantage of any of the offers that came his way. So he finally went to Hull, with Hull, I think, picking up his 50,000 wage bill. He's now scored three goals. Because he looks happy again. He wasn't in the starting lineup for this one. Hull were going with a sort of 4-1-4-1 with Abel Hernandez up front. Mm. But it was very much poop or bust for Hull. If they didn't get a result here, they would be in a lot of trouble.
Right.
And it was too, honest to God, they looked like two decent mid-table counter-attacking outfits. All the trouble to these two teams has been done in the first half of the season. And on the hour... Marco Silva made the change. He threw on Nias, went two up front, pushed a team that had already been pushing forward all day, pushed them even higher up the pitch, and was rewarded with two goals in 9 minutes, both particularly well taken. Mm. So fantastic result for Hull, which puts them right back in the fight for survival. They're now only 1 point away from Crystal Palace, who at the moment are just above the drop zone.
Right, I think producer Ben's having paroxysms of delight because you said, got in Nias. Yeah, glad to see we're not going to stoop to those depths. Was it all about Nias and Hull's organisation and Marco Silva genius, or was it the fact that Fernando Llorente got injured early doors?
Yeah, well, he wasn't the only one. Paul Clement said afterwards, he certainly agreed with the suggestion that anything that could go wrong did go wrong, because Angel Rango, himself a stand-in for Carl Norton, was injured in the first half. Then Llorente went as well and was replaced by Jordan Ayew, which is not a fair swap. And, of course, so much about Swansea's game at the moment is built on them getting crosses into the magnificent Llorente.
Right.
And that was where it fell apart. They didn't play particularly badly, but Wayne Routledge was guilty of one in particular, really, really bad miss. But what was interesting about all of this was afterwards, Paul Clement, who was very clear that he didn't blame the state of the pitch for the result, still pointed out that playing rugby league on it the night before was probably a bad idea. But Silva weighed in as well. He said, there's so much at this club that needs to change, and it's impossible to play rugby on a football pitch at this level.
Right.
So there may be trouble in paradise there. He may not be sticking around for too much longer.
Right, okay. Yeah, because the kind of football he likes to play, you can't do that on a Hull Kingston Rovers turfed up.
No, it's all quick counter-attacking football. You need to run with it, and you can't do that when people have been plucking carrots out the ground before.
Right, okay. That leaves them 1 point behind Palace and 3 points behind Leicester and Swansea. Leicester and Crystal Palace have games in hand, but it certainly breathes new life into their battle for survival. Other games this weekend included Everton's win over West Brom. Yeah. Right? Bournemouth's 3-2 victory over West Ham, Amy, was that exciting for you?
Josh King.
Yeah.
You know, he scored a nice hat-trick and missed a penalty and has been responsible for scoring most of Bournemouth's goals.
Bournemouth missed two penalties.
I thought we missed the other one. But I think watching that game, you could see both teams were terrible defensively. Like really appalling. I saw West Ham play Chelsea a week ago, and I thought they looked okay. Mm-hmm. Chelsea were just much stronger. But in this particular match, just shambles at the back. Right. Having said, Bournemouth win for the first time in, what, seven games?
Yeah, they haven't won since December 31st, New Year's Eve, when they battered Swansea. They were 3-0 up against Arsenal, of course, on January the 3rd, and they never recovered from that. They really needed this win. And I would not have liked to have been Eddie Howe's nervous system when those penalties were getting missed.
Absolutely. On the subject of multi-penalties, Gabriel Nielsen says, any chance for a mention of Gillingham, or is it Gillingham, AC Jimbo? There's three penalties in 9 minutes against Scunthorpe.
Yes, all converted by the same person, Josh Wright, because they were 2-0 down with 14 minutes to go. And then one, and then 4 minutes later, another one. First one was put in the bottom right, second one bottom left, third one bottom left again, I think. And Josh Wright, who obviously celebrated quite a lot, was then booked and will now miss the next two games.
Right. Do you remember Martin Palermo, who was famous for a hat-trick of penalties, and also for having procured himself, I think, a six-month injury for trying to do a... for falling off an advertising hoarding while celebrating a goal.
Breaking his leg badly.
Did he break his leg badly?
Broke his leg, yeah.
Who was the guy who almost tore his finger out when he jumped up against the fence?
Oh, that's horrible. Let's not talk about that.
Nice pod.
Yeah. Let's talk instead about Liverpool-Burnley, and is that what you were going to say?
Actually, I was just going to bounce back to Everton.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because everyone said this was the battle for seventh place. Which Everton conclusively won,
right,
moving 7 points ahead of West Brom. But could Everton actually go higher? Because they're only 2 points off Manchester United, only three off Arsenal, only four off Liverpool, albeit with a couple more games
under
their belt.
Man United have two games in hand on them,
but
so do Arsenal.
Look at Everton's running. Because
they
play Manchester United, they play Arsenal, and they play Liverpool.
Home or away?
They I can't remember off the top of my head, but Everton were knocked out of both domestic cups in the first round. They are fresh, and they're in their stride. They picked up 17 points from the last 24.
You're calling Everton for the top four?
I'm just saying they're a threat. I think people may be being a little bit complacent. They've got no other distractions and no pressure.
As if it wasn't crowded enough right now, as six teams try to squeeze their way into those Champions League positions. And, of course, that's only going to be a greater concern for their neighbours across Stanley Park.
Liverpool, yeah. I mean, since Liverpool won 1-0 in the derby back in December, Everton have won seven, drawn three and lost one. Having said that, they were quite outplayed by Spurs. But I think signing Schneiderlin,
right,
big addition. Also, the emergence of Davis. Barkley is certainly not the youngest player there, playing in a nicer position behind Lukaku. I think smarter management of Lukaku. They're looking really, really good at the moment. So I think the Merseyside derby is on the 1st of April, and I think Klopp should be worried.
Because Liverpool were absolutely crap against Burnley.
Particularly in the first half. First half was candidate for the worst half of the season for Liverpool.
Really?
They were just dreadful.
Great stat. Burnley, away from home all season, had led for 14 minutes prior to arriving at Anfield, where they enjoyed the lead for 38 minutes.
Having said that, they haven't really been hammered away from home for a while. They've lost 2-1 at Spurs, City, Arsenal, Liverpool now. Lost 2-1 at Watford, drew 1-1 with Hull, and I think lost 3-2 at Swansea. So there's been a spell of games where they haven't exactly been getting hammered.
They very rarely do. Even when their relegation season, there was only one game all season where they were really
They just couldn't score
the
back then.
They're a very, very decent team, and they just look more like they're more focused. They have more of a kind of holistic approach to the game.
Right.
Everything
I doubt
that's
the word
up.
Sean Dyche uses.
Probably not. But they looked a better team for the first half. Liverpool were dreadful. But as soon as they scored an injury time, well, it was the last kick of the first half, I think everybody on the planet knew how that was going to finish.
All right, so Wijnaldum and Chan with the goals.
I think apart from Liverpool fans, because they were still nervous throughout the second half, but I think this is another great thing about Wijnaldum. By the way, all 16 Premier League goals scored at home, 5 for Liverpool, 11 for Newcastle. Just his awareness in that particular situation, just knows where the goal is. I think he's just a very smart player. Having said, I think Liverpool are quite fortunate with Chan's equaliser. I think Heaton is a little bit slow getting across.
Yeah, the ball's pretty much gone in the only place where he's not going to get it. But it was the lack of any kind of link-up in the varying departments of Liverpool's first team.
Right.
The midfield was nowhere and completely outmanned, and that shouldn't happen when you've got three central midfielders against a 4-4-2. That shouldn't happen. You pretty much only had Sadio Mane making any kind of inroads anywhere.
So this issue that seems to have enveloped Liverpool since the turn of the year, Sasha, despite the win, it's still not going away. What's the problem there?
I sort of been looking and trying to sort of see. Mane has returned now and they're still very inconsistent. I'm beginning to come to the idea that perhaps Liverpool have a very good understanding of how they should be playing when they have their attacking... Well, the front six are all there. They know the interchange, they know how they should move. Of course, they struggle against tightly packed defensive sides who are very organised, like Burnley would be. So to unlock them, I think you really have to have a really good understanding and movement of those attacking players, and particularly John Henderson as well, kind of pivoting that whole midfield. Once you have Emre Can there, I know he played quite well against Arsenal, for example, with Wijnaldum next to him, but I just don't think he has the presence of mind to anchor that midfield, if you like. I think first half yesterday he went wandering between the centre-backs. Klopp was talking about it after the game, got quite angry about it, I think. Then Firmino falling out, Origi coming in. Coutinho has been badly off form as well. But I think when you have your Lallana, Wijnaldum, Henderson, Mane, Firmino, Coutinho all on the pitch, even if some of them are off form, that functions. Once you take one out, that's it. I think that's the shortness of the squad. I don't think he could have replaced everyone in the summer. And I think basically you can look at that, you think it's a work in progress.
Right, he had teenagers on the bench this weekend.
He needs more players, but I think I think the game is not going to come immediately.
How much business do you think Liverpool are going to be able to do in the summer?
Well,
in that regard,
my understanding was they could have done quite a lot of business last summer as well. But you have to bear in mind they had to overhaul quite a large chunk of the squad. I think the money should be there for the signings this summer. Basically they need backups in a lot of positions. I know Milner remained left back. I think it's because Liverpool couldn't find one. I think obviously the talk is of getting Brandt in, Pulisic, or Quincy Promise from Spartak Moscow, who's been having an excellent season. But he was never going to leave in the winter transfer window because he wants to win the league with Spartak, who are currently 8 points clear with 11 left. So he'll go in the summer.
He said he will.
He's
on a promise.
There you go.
Hey, tell you what, we could have some fun. Him, Isaac Success, all coming together in the Premier League.
The big problem with Liverpool remains at the back. I mean, I think, is it 36 goals conceded this season? So three more and they blow their chance at doing what they haven't done since 2010, which is concede fewer goals than games played. That was the last time they conceded fewer than 38 in a season under Rafa Benitez in that nightmarish season that saw him sacked at the end of it.
Right. And you know what another worrying thing is? Matip's making mistakes.
One more thing really to do today, and that's to talk about one or two departures, sadly, down in the Championship.
We also mentioned Real and the Keylor Navas mistake.
By all means.
So shout out to Real Madrid, who beat Betis 2-1. Keylor Navas, Schumacher, one of the attacking players, should have been sent off. A few minutes later, he basically got his technique completely wrong and threw the ball into the net. But then, of course, eventually Sergio Ramos to the rescue. For the fifth time in the Liga and probably seventh time overall this season, Toni Kroos to Ramos' goal, absolutely bullet header. So they increased the lead over Barcelona.
Yeah, that'd be the seventh time. And Ronaldo, I think, became the highest scorer ever in the top five European leagues.
Is that so?
Yeah, I saw the stat today.
Well, I saw a stat that said that the Kroos to Ramos combination was even more successful than any of the sort of Messi, Neymar, Suarez. The most successful combination
it was six
in
when
in
he
La
did
Liga
it in the Champions League. So I think it was seventh. Yeah.
Which is pretty extraordinary.
Very extraordinary.
And again, Ramos scoring crucial goals against, you know.
Absolutely.
I wonder what would have happened if Sergio Ramos had been an attacker and never been a defender.
Could have been a decent target, man.
Right. I love parallel universes. Grass is always greener in them, isn't it? But in this universe, this cold, grim, unrelenting, merciless dimension we inhabit, it's goodbye to Alex Neil, sat by Norwich, and Alan Pardew, the favourite, apparently, to take over there at Carrow Road. Is that right?
Yes. Apparently they've had a structural review, part of that review was to get rid of Alex Neil just 24 hours before the kickoff on Saturday. So poor old Alex Neil, who I think is still 35, which is horrendous that there can be a football manager who's actually had a lot of games and is still 4 years younger than me. He did, of course, get Norwich promoted up to the Premier League, couldn't quite keep them up. And this season, after a brief burst of promise that suggested the playoff place might be on, form has collapsed again and he's gone.
Okay.
But he wasn't the surprise.
The surprise was?
The surprise was Steve McLaren getting the sack from Derby.
All right, okay, so Steve McLaren has been sacked as Derby County manager for a second time 5 months after he was reappointed. He was reappointed by Derby 17 months after he was sacked, and he replaced Nigel Pearson, who left by mutual consent after less than 5 months. Their results hadn't been great, Ian. They're down in 10th place. So why did everyone think he was bulletproof?
Well, because when he'd taken over, remember Derby had been appalling under Nigel Pearson, a very unhappy club.
They were 20th when he took over.
And McLaren took over, and up they soared, looking like serious playoff contenders, until the turn of the year, which has had a weird effect on a surprising number of clubs, where I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's sort of relegation form in the last 10 games. And if you watched them against Brighton, you'd have fallen into two camps, one being very impressed with Brighton, particularly Anthony Knockhart, who looks fantastic. And two, just Derby just looked like, you know, like a half-dead mouse in the mouth of a cat. They just weren't at it at all. And I think Mel Morris was so embarrassed by that that he swung the axe.
Well, yeah, he definitely belongs in the latter
very
of those
much
two
so.
Camps.
Yes.
He put out a statement saying that it was significant that the Brighton loss was symbolic or evidence of a significant, unexpected and persistent decline in results, unity and morale, which is, you know, pretty damning words. Anyway, Derby are going to be taking on Nottingham Forest in the Derby.
Yes.
This weekend, do you know, and this is a stat, if you got to go on, Ian.
I was just going to say, possibly with the manager that Nottingham Forest very nearly hired.
Right.
Because Gary Rowett was supposed to take over at Forest.
Right. Good
but
news.
Did not. Good news for
Derby, if they bring in Gary Rowett.
If they can bring in Gary Rowett, yeah, after the work he did at Birmingham, which has been thrown into even greater contrast by the lack of success of his successor.
Right. Anyway, this game here will be the fifth consecutive clash between Derby and Nottingham Forest, with different managers in both dugouts. Five times in a row, they've had entirely new sets of managers. That's incredible. Yeah,
but doesn't it say it all about the stagnation of both clubs?
Right. I suppose so.
Could I just pop back into Parallel Universe again, please?
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Parallel Universe, that is Scottish football.
Ah.
Celtic 1, Rangers 1.
Yes.
So Celtic drawn for only the second time this season, but I was just amazed.
That's our universe, by the way, Sasha. That genuinely happened.
Yeah. It's bizarre. But other odd stuff happening here, happening there. I saw Clint Hill got the equaliser. I mean, he's 38. He's not very fast. I didn't realise he's still playing top-level football somewhere. And then he nearly gave away the penalty.
Okay, long pause while we all bite our lips. But yes, well done for mentioning that. We should also say, as impressive as Brighton were with their 3-0 win against Derby, Fulham, how about their result to really fire up their promotion
and
push?
If ever a club deserved it, because they had Leeds in midweek and they went down to a hideous comic own goal after 5 minutes, but then put Leeds right on the back foot for the rest of the game. So they were due a result. They are a really good football team. They're really hitting their stride right now under Jukanovic, which is kind of a surprise given the long-running civil war between him and the son of the owner and his mate who are in charge of recruitment. Which has caused much consternation behind the scenes.
How has that civil war, how has it materialised?
Well, Jukanovic, up until very recently, I don't know if the situation has changed since he signed his new contract, but he didn't have final say on who could be hired.
Right.
It was the owner's son's mate who did it all off the laptop, who apparently had final say, making such decisions as blocking the move to get Andrea Pereira on loan from Manchester United because his numbers didn't add up, which Jukanovic was entirely unamused by.
Right.
But if you watch Fulham play, if you get a chance to watch him play, they're a really good football side, and Tom Kearney looks outstanding right now.
Right, these people, he's probably played Football Manager a bit, Ian, and thinks he knows his way around a pitch.
The nerve of people like that to carve out a living in this industry.
He's got to have a tattoo if he wants to be working there. Sorry, I'm not having it.
Of a laptop. Yeah. Right.
It just so happens.
Thank goodness you were spared that, listeners. Ian just took much of his shirt off. That's, as far as I know, everything for today. There's stuff in football that we haven't talked about, but we'll be back on Thursday. Amy, anything you want to throw in at the end?
No, it's been a really very warm, fuzzy pod, as you suggested,
has
been highly surprising. So
I'm glad we got to the end. I'm glad we didn't kind of like call it off 10 minutes from time saying nothing's going to happen here, because there was every reason to. Anyway, well, delighted to see you again. And yeah, don't be a stranger.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
Good. Ian, lovely to see you again. Sasha?
Pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, delighted that you could make it after your busy weekend. And you, listener, because I know time is tight for you as well. You be off and do all those other important things you've got to take care of. But make sure you get back here for Thursday when we'll be back with Football Weekly Extra, reviewing so much of that midweek European action. Speak to you soon. Bye for now.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.